But I want to ask you what you think of when I say post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. Unless you've got someone in your life suffering from it, or indeed are yourself suffering from it, you probably have a very Hollywood mindset of battle-scarred soldiers with thousand-yard stares, waking up in the middle of the night, sweating heavily and unable to kind of come to grips with their family around them. It's a bit of a trope these days, even. How accurate is it? Well, I'm joined on the line by Professor Sandy McFarlane, Director of the University of Adelaide's Centre for Traumatic Stress Studies. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Now, the Hollywood concept of PTSD, how does that rank in terms of accuracy when we look at the real-world affliction?
I think that what we often underestimate is how subtle and hidden the effects of trauma are in people's lives. I mean, I think particularly people who've been the victims of child abuse, domestic violence, motor vehicle accidents, which are really the very common causes of PTSD in our community, I think we just have very little visibility of the cost and the suffering that's hidden within our community.
You mentioned it's quite subtle. What are people experiencing when they have PTSD?
One of the core features of PTSD is people's behaviour is often really very disrupted when they get put into environments that remind them of the traumatic experience. People who have been the victims of child abuse, for example, have extraordinary difficulty in intimate and close personal relationships, but very seldom will declare the reason because of the shame and the humiliation that people experience. So it's those very sort of subtle behaviours and withdrawal that people have. Also, often these people are very emotionally shut down, numb. They don't feel. Numbing is a way of dealing with the distress and the reactivity that these people have. And it's often very poorly understood.
Now, stress is a very individual thing, and our reactions to stress are very individual. Can sort of any traumatic experience set off a PTSD?
I think one of the things that the research that's now been done over 3.5 decades shows is that these really are the events that are at the extreme ends of life, what life dishes out. You know, we're not talking about experiences such as divorce, loss of a job, or day-to-day strains and stresses in the workforce. This is what happens to people with catastrophic threat and exposure to horrific circumstances. And the interesting thing about it is that actually there is a limited number of ways that the brain can actually respond to those sorts of experiences. And I think that's one of the things that we've come to learn. It is about events of that magnitude and their capacity to disrupt people's orientation to their world and relationships after they've been through those sort of events.
You did mention that the relationships are often quite hard, and I imagine that combined with a flattened affect also means that with the lack of understanding, it must be a very socially isolating thing to be experiencing.
Well, it is, and often I think what people might observe in somebody who's got PTSD is their sense of indifference and lack of distress. And actually one group of people where this is particularly important is police officers, because after they've had repeated traumatic exposures, they're often the object of violence in the course of their job. They will, you know, go to horrific accidents, deal with horrific crime scenes, and what they sometimes lose is their empathy and sensitivity, and they'll seem to be callous and indifferent, whereas in fact behind that lies this terrible sense of suffering, which they sort of try and shut themselves off from.
What are the traditional treatments for PTSD? I mean, are we looking sort of medical treatments or mostly on a counselling side?
Well, look, I think it's really very much two sides to the story. I mean, I think the first one is that one of the things that we know about traumatic experiences is that these are the types of things that happen in people's lives that language very, very poorly captures, so that often the memories have a very physical and sensory quality to them. You know, for example, somebody who's, for example, come across a horrific car accident where somebody's been incinerated will often be intensely troubled by the smell and the horrific sight, and the sorts of subtle triggers for that might be, you know, cooking barbecued meat. And so that one of the critical ways of dealing with this lack of verbal representation is through psychotherapies, you know, predominantly cognitive behavioral psychotherapy, where if you get the person to actually focus on the experience, which is, of course, the last thing they feel like doing, they can then begin to create a richer verbal narrative that, in a sense, then puts those physical memories to one side, so they actually have a more symbolic representation of the experience.
Professor, just finally, can people recover, or is it more of a management system?
Look, people can very much recover, I think that's one of the important messages to get across. People who get the right treatment can do very well. I think the other thing we also need to recognise is that despite the best treatments, there is still a group of people who really are left significantly disabled. I think our health system is not well attuned to managing the needs and caring for those people.
Yeah, some very sage advice. Professor, thank you very much for talking to Breakfast this morning.
It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Sandy McFarlane there, Director of the University of Adelaide Centre for Traumatic Stress Studies, talking about PTSD, the real world PTSD, not your Hollywood PTSD. And look, if you did find any of that a little distressing, or perhaps something that you're maybe feeling within yourself, don't forget Lifeline 13 11 14.